Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face, an irreverent podcast about the music news and music culture that mostly matters. I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And on episode 207 of this podcast, we have three albums we're going to be listening to or talking about how we listen to them. Punk by Young Thug, Music of the Spheres by Coldplay, and Optimist by Phineas. These are some heavy hitters here, let's say. Very much. And then also our singles as well. Very interesting singles we're going to be talking about in just a moment. How are you doing this week, Son?
Did you just call me Hassan?
I said, how are you doing this week, Sean, but I didn't do the H as like prominently as I should have.
Okay. I was going to say,
it was more like Son. So not like an Azan.
Okay, I was about to say, I'm like, I ain't Turkish, bud. But, you know, it's been a chill week. You know, it's been good. I've been waiting to rant about Coldplay, and we'll get to that in a little while. And, you know, yeah.
Yeah,
it's been chill.
First, we have to go into our single. I mean, we don't have to, but since we're here.
We might as fucking well. You know, we got single doos for you.
Yeah, first one is Easy On Me by Adele. So she's back, I guess.
Welcome back, Adele.
Yeah.
Yep. Hello.
Ready Player One.
It's me.
Oh my God. I changed you. I was to put you both first, but now I give up. Go easy on me, baby. I was still a child. Didn't get the chance to.
Thank you.
Adele is back. McRib is back. And no, seriously, this is the first track off of what she says is her divorce album. It's going to be called 30, from what I understand. And it's called,
Easy On Me. 19, 22, 25, and now 30, something like that. Think of her records. Yeah.
I believe so. And so it's a very interesting record, very like the track itself is really nice. It's artful, a lot of piano in the background.
Yeah, it's definitely like it's solid Adele. Like it sounds like an Adele track. No complaints. So the only thing is like we can't super judge it until the record is out, obviously, because I have no idea if she's just gonna stick to her tried and true sound of piano ballads or if she's gonna switch it up. You know, maybe she throws in BTS in her album. Who knows?
Hold. But like I think that it's nice to that, you know, this is like a no gimmicks kind of Adele.
For
this
sure.
is just really raw emotion, power. And the production is really nicely. I like the way the bass kind of comes into the song underneath the piano and like they slide on the key, like they slide on the frets really nicely in a way that really complements the keys that are being played. Just those little flourishes like that in these songs, I really look at and I really enjoy. But like you said, Sean, it's going to take a little while to, like we're going to have to listen to the full song in 100%. Context of the album in order to really like make a great judgment on it. But at least it's not like, it's not anything bad. It's not anything that's like making us upset, anything to begin with. It's not making a lot of people upset either. In fact, it's blown through records on Spotify and Amazon Music for most streamed songs like in a day period. So like clearly Adele's got that star power still.
Seriously, it's crazy.
Yes. Moving on, we have Strong by Joe Tyrone. Joe Tyrone is another person who sent us in one of his tracks. He is one of Audioface's proud UK listeners. So shout out to y'all over there. And also was a fellow Bleachers enjoyers. Yes. Also a fan of the Bleachers as well, as we enjoy the Bleachers as well. And he released a song, Strong, that actually came out a little bit earlier this year in April. But, you know, it's this year. This is a new music podcast. New is subjective, especially when you email in at audiophase@syndicate23.co to send in your music. But yeah, I really like this track.
I thought it was nice. It's the music video is pretty nice because He worked with the producer of Linkin Park on the track, and it's pretty crisp and clear. Really like the vocals and the lyrics on there as well. It's a good track. I like it.
Yeah, if
I
I
think
had.
he's going to be releasing an album as well later on this year, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I'll definitely be looking out for that. If I had a slight critique, I'd say the vocal flourishes in the second half of the song I liked more than the first. The first, I felt like in the first half of the song, I felt the vocals fell like could almost fall prey to, similar things you hear a lot in pop. And I felt like near the latter half of the song, he was more challenging his vocal range a little bit more. So I'm excited to see how that continues to like grow and improve as well. But overall, it didn't distract too much from a track that was really good.
I agreed.
And then we have Against the Blade by The Horrors, but we don't care. We really want to care. I really wanted to
I
listen to
really
this
want to talk
song.
about that track,
It
Jesus
was such
Christ.
a tease, but
God
we
damn it.
can't
Oh Lord.
because
Look, you just drop the album and just do it.
we listened to the Lout
Inject it
EP.
in my
The
veins.
Horrors are going to be coming out with something soon. We don't know exactly when, but even though it's physically difficult for us, we are not going to listen to or review
I'm just
this
gonna say
track
it's good,
on
that's
the
it.
podcast. God
That's
damn it,
it.
Sean. And so this has been the singles. We review singles pretty much every single week. Please send us your singles, not only at our email address, but on Twitter or Instagram, at Audio Face Pod. Those are our handles there. But also make sure you're checking out our playlist, the 2021 AF playlist, where we're updating it every single week with music that we like or music that we can tolerate. Check out our bonus episodes. Relevant to this episode, we did a bonus episode on Coldplay, and Sean really went in on the good, the bad, and the ugly of Coldplay. That's episode 121 bonus. You can look at that in the archives, and you can see our most recent Coldplay review, save for this one, and 122, episode 122 in the archives. So you can see our, lead up to Coldplay and our review of, I believe, their last album, Everyday Life, or something like that. And then, of course, we're going to have our review of their newest album very, very shortly on this podcast. But we do bonus episodes all the time. We did one on Kendrick Lamar. He's going to be dropping very soon. We've done one on Radiohead. They're going to be dropping very soon. Caro Caro, Benito, Daft Punk, State of Music 2021. That was just like a talking about music as it exists.
Man, November. Jesus.
November has come. And
Man's gone away.
our special on MF Doom, still one of like, not as like a very downloaded episode, but people really loved that. Felt like it was a good sort of sending off for the spirit of MF Doom, who apparently
Daniel Dumoulin.
is coming up on his 1 year secret death anniversary. But
Holy shit,
anyway,
that's right.
yeah.
Allegedly, because we're Doom Truthers. This is a Doom Truther podcast.
Doom truthers are safe here. Don't let anyone call you a fanatic or conspiracy theorist. By our alpha brain. Anyways, Power Report, we did a recent episode, kind of wide ranging on American politics, kind of wide ranging on worker power and a strike wave going on, a little bit on the Schapelsky, of course. And thank you, Peter, for making that episode of Power Report and this episode of Audio Face sound as good as they can and hopefully even better in the future. You can find him at Dead Music Productions at deadmusic666 on Insta. With that, let's move on into the news, shall we? And this is a little bit of an update from a story we did last week. So last week we talked about a story where it was reported by Rolling Stone and a number of different outlets that out of the $500,000 or so dollars that Morgan Wallen had pledged to give to different Black organizations, Black serving groups, in the wake of his apology tour for being caught on video ranting and saying the N-word.
Ardar.
Yes. Rolling Stone had reported that the Black Music Action Coalition had only received a small amount of that money, and the rest of it just hadn't been anywhere. And that was a story that made the rounds like everywhere. We covered that on Audio Face, laughing at the idea that, come on, you can't even like make your apology right, and you have to like watch for these. You have to really watch and see like are people going to follow through after their apologies or not. That's really how you can tell if people mean things or not. Nevertheless, USA Today, Melissa Ruggieri, sorry if I'm mispronouncing that, at USA Today, did some follow-up on this and basically noted that in April, investigated in April, Wallen donated $300,000 to the BMAC in the names of 20 people who had counseled him following the incident when he uttered the N-word during a night of partying. I'm reading from the USA Today article. Those individuals were given the option to funnel their respective $15,000 to the charity of their choice or keep their money within the BMAC. And of that money, $165,000, that amount, remained with the BMAC, which is what the spokesperson of the organization confirmed to USA Today. The remaining $135,000 out of that $300,000 was distributed to several smaller charities of the individual's choice. So that kind of follows through with how that distribution was going on. Do you follow so far? So then we go into, and just saying, like, there are some other different organizations that their donations went to. Young People's Chorus of New York City, Teen Dream Center, a Nashville ministry for inner city youth, the Beatrice Welters Breast Health Outreach and Navigation Program. Additionally, in May, Wallen's record label, Big Loud Records, donated $100,000 to Rock Against Racism on behalf of the singer. And this was confirmed by the founder of the nonprofit. And so they're trying to align musicians in the music industry to combat against systemic racism. And the remaining $100,000 has been earmarked to be dispersed to Black-led organizations in Tennessee by the end of the year. And that's according to Wallen's management. So all in all, there was $300,000 that was spent originally, but it was made in, like, by Wallen, but a bunch of individual donors could choose wherever they wanted to go to it. A little more than half sent it to the BMAC. A little less than half chose to send it to a bunch of other different organizations musically. Some of them seemed specifically, like, Black-related. Some of them seemed like they're a little more broad. Okay, sure, but those are, like, people's individual decisions. That's sort of where they're shifting the direction towards. Another substantial amount, at least through his label, $100,000 went to the specific Rock Against Racism programs. That's a little bit more targeted. And then the other $100,000 is still set to be dispersed. So at least that's a higher level. It's definitely different from the story that, oh, only $165,000 was paid and the rest is missing. The rest went a number of different places, and I think you could talk about the places, but that's sort of the standard story.
Yeah, so it's just they need to do a little bit more digging to figure out everything and we correct what we correct what information that we get presented to us. So
yeah, So, like, that's kind of the top of the story. This is pointed out to us by someone named Jessica JPB, who has a fairly sizable YouTube channel. And at least a lot of the uploads I've seen have been devoted to Morgan Wallen things. And there's a bit of a mix-up on our channel. I honestly don't know why YouTube does this sometimes. But
yeah, like, I don't understand that.
Sometimes comments, like, get through and sometimes they don't. We barely, like, you know, every once in a while we'll, like, look in and go, oh, there's a bunch of comments, let's look and see if, okay, these are spam, let's get rid of these, okay, these are cool, let's respond to them. So it's not something that we're actively monitoring by any chance, at least at this point right now. And so for whatever reason this comment was removed, but I have a way in YouTube to kind of go back into the logs a different way and see it, so I was able to recover the comment, not before Jessica JPB kind of, like, sort of tried to do the semi-call-out thing, saying that, oh, we were trying to delete the truth because we couldn't handle the truth. Very much not true. We responded to that comment saying, listen, we didn't, like, we're just learning about the article. Thank you for presenting it to us. We'll talk about it in the next episode, as we are doing here. But however, the original comment said that we should do real research and not take our info from biased Rolling Stone or wherever you found it. First of all, I mean,
it was, like, several outlets, too. It wasn't just Rolling Stone.
Yeah, it was Rolling Stone's original report. Several other outlets did it. You can definitely comment that Rolling Stone, there could have been, like, deeper reporting done into
this. Oh, for sure.
But, like, Rolling Stone published that story. I don't think they're... And the top-level thing of $165,000 went to the BMAF, that's still true. There's just, like, more to the story that Rolling Stone, you could argue, didn't completely cover. I wouldn't say that's less of bias. I think it's an Occam's razor situation, which Dave Rubin's definition is not this. It's actually, the definition is, it's usually like, don't assume it was like malintent in these sort of situations. It was more just like, hey, they could have done more research. It's clear here. USA Today picked up there. God bless. But She's kind of saying he didn't fall mad short. 400K has been sent out, the 500K as promised. Here are some real journalists who actually care about the truth and aren't just running around with a negative narrative and attempting to beat him further into the ground. This is kind of a thing here. And to be fair, Jessica JPB, she apologizes for the comment, saying kind of being slightly rude in the second comment, because she thought that she was being deleted and censored for her stance, because we live in a society where people think that if your YouTube comment doesn't show up immediately, big government's taking you down, whatever. Okay, but like the big thing here is that, and this is maybe more towards Jessica, like you have a bias as well. Let's be clear about that. Your bias is in favor of Morgan Wallen, and that's totally fine, but maybe the bias we have on this podcast is one of like anti-racism. And one of the fact that the Morgan Wallen attempted to, and with like a lot of the music industry behind him, look, there was a lot of criticism. The Country Music Association, a number of different entities basically discredited him for the year as a in responding to this comments. Mm. But that being said, he went on Good Morning America and put on a nice little suit and sort of started to massage his image about it and did these donations. And now we're supposed to say, okay, stop digging him further into the ground or beating him further into the ground. But what we're critiquing on this podcast is the fact that this was a moment where country music should have been more reflective of, hey, why are we just sort of patting someone on the back or slapping someone on the wrist for clunkily talking about their N-word video and saying like, oh, I don't know what that the context of that word or what that word means. That's BS. That's nonsense. There was a country music artist, Mickey Guyton. She's a black woman. Mm-hmm. She's been making a lot of rounds in country music as of late because of her identity and how well she's been doing in the country music space over the past couple years. But she was very open in talking about the Morgan Wallen case originally. Case like as was happening originally by saying that sorry, I'm trying to get the comments up here, but she was saying that this kind of stuff happens in country music all the time. This Mickey Guyton even tweeted this is not his first time that using this unacceptable racial slur, and we all known that. So what exactly are y'all going to do about it? Is the fact that racism persists in country music very often, and Mickey Guyton has felt it very recently. She had to post a bunch of hateful comments saying, targeting her son, who she posted after she talked about like her, you know, she just posted a new song, she's doing all this, she's being a normal kind of musician sharing aspects of her life, and she's getting a bunch of messages saying, go back to the projects, that's the ugliest child I've ever seen, from supposed country music fans. So okay, maybe you're saying, oh no, Morgan Wallen's being beaten to the ground by the media who wants to paint him as a certain thing, all right, but Morgan Wallen got caught saying the N-word at the same time his career is blowing up in country music. At the same time, a lot of black people are trying to talk about how racist country music is, the environment is, and it doesn't need to be this way, but there needs to be more people who are speaking up about Morgan Wallen supposedly being over-canceled. They also need to speak up just as forcefully about these issues of racism. Otherwise, music fans like me, who identify as black, are going to notice that you're paying more attention to one thing than the other. And we are going to make our own assessments about that, because that's about like survival in this country, honestly. So like that's ultimately my response, that this isn't about digging Morgan Wallen into the ground. This is about racism in country music. This is about what Morgan Wallen and the whole situation represents and how the fact that there is no accountability being had for this incident here. So like in the most respectful way possible, don't just assume that anyone who disagrees with your favorite country music artist is biased. Black people exist, and they exist in country music as well.
Move on to music reviews.
Yeah, speaking of black people and a different kind of country music entirely, we got Young Thug's Punk.
Jeez.
It is 20 songs, an hour and 3 minutes long, and Young Thug. He has been, you know, around at it for a minute.
Yeah.
One of his most popular, like, sort of mixtapes, Beautiful Thugger Girls, came out in 2017, and that kind of like really showed people, okay, this is a rapper, but this is also someone with a lot of, you know, musical cachet, who's trying to experiment and do a lot of things. Not all of it's landing all the time, but he's really pushing things forward. Since then, you've gotten albums like So Much Fun, Slimy Season, and where you're sort of like, okay, Young Thug's,
and never forget Slime Language 2, baby. Slime Language 2,
of course, that we reviewed recently this year.
Yep.
And it was The interesting thing with these projects is that I have very rarely found myself liking a particular Young Thug project all the way through. Our So Much Fun review in 2019 or 2018, it was 2019. I'm pretty sure we were pretty harsh on the album. There are only a couple songs I liked going into it. And, you know, over time, there are a few songs I was able to go back to and enjoy more. But still, through the album and a deluxe version of the album too, it wasn't something that I felt had a lot of replay value. It wasn't something that I felt showed the best of Young Thug, where I think Young Thug came off best is his features. I think that's where you could really feel Young Thug as an artist sort of sing and prosper on other artists' records, like
for sure.
Aminé with Compensating in another different trap and B context, like he's just
or even like on the most favorite song, the You're Way Too Sexy, on Drake's album.
Yeah, like he's and akin to Drake, he's doing like you can rap, he can sing, he can have this real like stage presence. He can have this like lyrical depth while also simultaneously saying lyrics that make no sense whatsoever, that's just more for the rhythm. But like, no, Young Thug is trying to establish himself as like the next kind of do it all rap kind of but also pop superstar. And I think Punk is his most ambitious project yet and more or less nails a lot of it.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings of the record. I think the beginning starts really slow and it was interesting. It kind of caught me off guard a little bit with the production, even like the track with Metro Boomin, the third track, Stupid Asking. How long they take to develop and stuff it surprised me with that, how the production was. Some of the features I thought were pretty good. Stressed, which J. Cole and T. Shine were pretty good. I like J. Cole's part in it. It picks up the song, picks up kind of the album and stuff. J. Cole, I think, is having a pretty good year this year. This album I do enjoy a lot, even though we ripped him a new one a few years ago. But, you know, and also he did quit basketball team, but more on that towards the award show later this year. Be sure to be on the lookout for that. Gunna is still horrible on Recognize Real. Like, Gunna's just awful. Probably one of my least favorite rappers by far.
He's on here three times though, so.
And all those three songs I don't really like. but there's some tracks in here I thought were decent. Peeping Out the Window with Beast Slime and Future, surprisingly, because I'm not a big Future fan at all, but I thought the way he did the Trap and B style with it, I thought worked with the way my Thug's voice works and everything. Listen to me closely. Bitch, I got a rollie. It's gold like a trophy. All of my kids great. If you truly know me, most of my dogs bossed up. Young and drunk, this how they gang. He got some fucking diamonds. We make temporary decisions, change the fucking climate. Run with D-Boy, yeah, them boys will be running the lobby. Change the channel, you know I'm up next. By the way, I pass it. I sip on Certa like, but no one understand, man. I told my mama, no more suffering. My biggest pet peeve with Young Thug is he has the Playboy Cardi voice, so they keep get really high pitched and annoying at times. And you get that towards the beginning of the album for sure. But throughout, it gets a little bit better. And you have some tracks that are definitely worth listening to a couple of times and putting out in different mixes and stuff. You could definitely have it there.
What you'll definitely realize from this album is that it doesn't sound like any trap album released this year. Like, just.
No, it's definitely different.
Yeah, and this is the podcast where we're cheering on different shit. This is the podcast we're going to be cheering on artists who are very boldly, because this is something that's very rare, I think. Someone at Young Thug's like game. It's not like this isn't totally telegraphed. I knew that people knew he'd be going to be making some record like this. We knew Punk would kind of be this attempt, but for it to come out so, you know, replacing a lot of the 808s with acoustic guitars and replacing a lot of the synthy aspects and things with more rock and alternative, almost indie motifs, but also still being comfortable within trap as a genre. I mean, this is stuff that I feel like I was begging for. Not exactly, right? Like, this isn't perfect, right? But this is the kind of experimentation in trap music that I was begging for when Audioface started, like in 2017, when everything was repetitive as shit. And it took 4 years for a mainstream artist to do it. But like, it's a little bit of a watershed moment that it's actually being done with Future and the late Juice WRLD and ASAP Rocky and like Travis Scott and Drake all on here. And it's like, it's actually a thing that I can actually take seriously that also has mainstream appeal.
Well, like if you look at the song Contagious, I really like that track, the one fifth track right after Recognize Real with Gunna. I thought that like that track really got me into the album of wow, Thugger is really trying to do something different here. He's because compared to Slime Language 2, which was awful, really didn't like Slime Language 2 that much. It's nice to hear him branch out, experiment, do something different, and like they just band.
I took my string and I remade the song. I wish that keeping it real really was contagious. Cause I be showing love, always make me face you. But that's what's in my heart, I can never change you. I just wish that things were reciprocated. They always told me I'll be going places. Now I'm just surrounded by these different faces. But all of this applause, yeah, it came with hatred. I wish that keeping it real really was contagious. Yeah.
Yesterday, I love the drums, like the way the beat goes and everything. You have this really industrial sound in the back. That you get to hear a lot of punk and rock bands and stuff. And I thought it's good. Even like the tracks with artists I normally don't like. Yeah, Bubbly with Drake and Travis Scott, I thought was actually a pretty good track. That's one of the more trappy-ish songs, but it still sounds pretty good. But that's towards later down the line.
Yeah. Like in the middle where you have Rich Nigga Shit with Juice WRLD. You've just solo with Young.
Anyone had a song called the same title, right? Sure, with Metro Boomin.
Yeah, and there's R&P with Corday and Anderson .Paak as well. So you know, this is a constant motif in rap music. Rappers talking about their wealth. Interesting. So it's just right. It feels like
more on that later.
Right. It almost feels like you have to punch in your card with one of those. But it's I feel like there critiques coming. The first half of the record, I definitely agree. It starts off very slow. And because you, as I think anyone as a regular fan of trap or, just someone who would expect Young Thug, like this album's not like very much, like only like a particular music critic. And I think even most music critics can be not surprised by like this album intro. It's going to be very shocking to a lot of people. Right. And so I think the entire sound of the album is something that people will get used to and ultimately enjoy and will appreciate Young Thug for like pushing some boundaries here. But I feel like it isn't until song 6, 7, 8, where the album starts to really hit its stride with mixing this sort of acoustic trap sound that's trying to happen while keeping up the tempo and the pace we usually expect from a trap album, because normally trap albums are top heavy and all the bangers are at the top. And so it's good that you're not doing that same thing. However, trap fans are going to expect something like that. And so you're going to throw them a little bit of a bone. Like songs 2, 3, 4 should have sounded a little bit more like songs 11, 12, 13, if you know what I mean, right? So this could just be like an ordering difference.
100%. Yeah, you could have ordered it differently to make it flow a bit better. Like I wish it started off a little bit more like teasing us with the more of the experimentation stuff, so that way you get sucked into it, because it takes a while to get into the record. Like starting off with Die Slow with Strick, like it's just, it really takes you a while to get into it. And then even with Stressed with J. Cole and T-Shine, that first half of the song is still really slow. It isn't until J. Cole's part where it picks up and then you finally get sucked into the album, 7.5 minutes in or so. And with some of with how long the record is and whatnot, it starts you off on the wrong foot. Also with the Metro Boomin track of Stupid Asking, that track is 5.5 minutes long and it's also slower as well. So the first three tracks are pretty slow and it takes a while for you to get through that. So that's, 12, 13 minutes long of you just sitting through three tracks to then get you into Recognize Real and Contagious when you really get to start to slowly get unraveled of what this album is like.
Yeah,
I just
will say on Stupid Asking, it's one of those like double songs that's done really well. Like we're just talking about like Baby Keem, like you can't keep doing like this stitch two trap songs together and make it work. This is the opposite. This is like these are two, one song blends really nicely into another, and it's like a real double, like this is like a Kid Cudi kind of double song here. It's true art. I will say that.
Yeah, no, I like it. I mean, Anything Metro touches turns into gold at some point, I swear. But like more of the critique, when you get down to Living It Up with ASAP Rocky and Post Malone, I don't like the way it starts with Post Malone's production. Like it sounds too much like a Post Malone track. And you have my favorite thing of a slow acoustic guitar with snap clap. So, you know, I already automatically love that song with a burning passion. Anyway, it's just overdone. It's something where I just... Post Malone really is running out of ideas, and you can hear it because even on his features, it's anytime he does it, it's really hard for him to conform to the sound of whatever artist he's working with. It stands out too much as like, oh, this is a Post Malone track. So it's something I think that kind of in the middle of the album almost derails it, but then you have Yeah Yeah right after that, and that gets the album back to where like you can get that nice trap and bass sound. You can get a little bit more experimentation stuff right after. So, but overall, I think it's a pretty good record. Towards the end, you have Filthy Day Deed. You have Icy Hot with, you know, not outright leaning Doja Cat. And then the last track.
Why are you just before, biased media, Sean, trying to drag Doja Cat's name into the mud?
I will drag her damn name to the ground. I don't give a fuck. This is our podcast, you know. I will double down, triple down. I've done it before.
Oh my god. Really fast before you continue, I just want to go back to Post Malone because he's not done with the smoke yet. The post-chorus lyric, now you see we going dumb, dumb, dumb. Yeah, one's too many, 100 isn't enough. Yeah, 100 just isn't enough. So if you're at a point where one is too many, but 100 isn't enough. The lyric would almost make sense if you flipped it around. Like one isn't enough, 100 is too many, right? You could still make the same exact point, but not flip it around. Like, I've lost sleep over how dumb this lyric is, dude. You don't understand. Like, Post Malone needs one of those Lord breaks, like just in New Zealand with a piano or the Steinbeck somewhere on a beach. Just like, it's just like, go somewhere in a corner, come back in 3 years, let's see what you got then, buddy.
It's I could see that. Next thing you know, he's gonna get a random producer and he's gonna make like the worst album of the year in like 5 years from now, which I'm down
Post Malone and Jack Antonoff take the wheel.
Oh Jesus Christ, Lord help me. I'm kind of down. I'd actually be interested to see what the hell that ends up being like.
I will say, posthumous features for the win. So yeah, I was saying that Rich Nigga Shit with Juice WRLD was very, very good. Juice WRLD just what a damn shame. Managers, watch the drugs your people are taking, for Christ's sake. Same with Mac Miller, honestly.
To say literally same with Mac Miller, man. Because it's a damn good ending track. While I'm sleeping, yeah, yeah. Swimming in the linen like the deep end, yeah, yeah. All I ever needed was an alibi, yeah, yeah. I don't need a motherfucking reason, yeah. Out of mind, so I keep busy. Everything 100, I don't ever leave 50, yeah. Did my own halftime and follow simple. What the fuck you think I'm rich for? Why you think I'm always talking shit? With my hand on my dick and the crib, these bitches turn into a strip show. That's what it is,
yeah,
though.
And some of the criticisms I have with it are just like, okay, well, one of the artists just wasn't alive to see this track get made and finished. So, like, our critique with Posthumous album stands, where like it would still be a little bit better with the artist just like more naturally being on it. It would be timed better, it would feel just a lot more natural. It always is gonna feel a little bit off, not even just like knowing about the passing, but just it doesn't sound necessarily right, like fully mixed properly.
Yeah.
But overall, I Punk is far from perfect. I'm not gonna say that. There's some like 5 out of 5 star reviews, like rap album of the year. I'm gonna have to marry it. I'm gonna have to let it sit, but
I don't know if it'd be rap album of the year for me, but
I can definitely say this is gonna get my like one of my top nominations for the Doing Something Fucking Different award, because
100%.
This album should
reverse Coldplay.
Yeah, this album should have failed a lot more than it did, but it lands on its feet a lot more than it did. And this is like a triple A rap entertainers album with like nonstop major features. From an artist who's like not even fully peaked in his game yet, and he's this experimental and this willing to try things differently. Like, homie's going out like on on sets and things, like doing shows in a skirt. But also, like, one of the early lyrics is, "You knew I wasn't gay when I was a kid because like I was getting nudes sent to my mom's phone when I was 8 or whatever." Which a lyric in its own context is a little weird, but like it's what I'm trying to say is Young Thug is doing his own thing more or less, and he's really comfortable with that sound and he's confidently doing it. He's not listening to like haters and bullshit about it, and it more or less ends up all right as an album. So I'm very, very
as long as he never makes a 2 Chainz lyric of old enough to be your daddy, young enough to fuck your mama, or whatever god awful track that was. Please never do that again, ever. Whoever, anybody.
That goes hard. We will not take slander. That's not...
Oh no, it does. It's hilarious. It just every time I hear that track, I'm like, I'm so uncomfortable.
Arbitrary scale. We do arbitrary scales every week on Audio Face because what we said in the review is what we said in the review. God damn it. And so that's all we feel. This week it's gonna be Senator of West Virginia, Joe Manchin, the coal baron himself. His top contributors.
Take me home, country roads. This is a solid Comcast court, baby.
Comcast.
Or Comcast. You know, Dan's had too many run-ins with the Comcast Corporation, so, you know, beautiful. Build big.
They're trying to win me back by advertising internet speeds that literally are not available in my area because Comcast is not available in my area. So keep going, NBC. Love it. I'm going to give this Berkshire Hathaway.
I was thinking about a Berkshire Hathaway. But
they got their hands in everything. So a little bit here, a little bit there. Berkshire's, you know, the Berkshire.
Berkshire, yeah, exactly.
You're going to see some like molten lava flowing on a new island somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. And then like there's going to be a little hut that says Berkshire Hathaway on that shit. All right. Moving on. Let's get my news back up here. So the FBI is FBIing and they have denounced a string of recent arrests and violence in the city as the result of drill rap. And so music videos and, you know, drill rap and music videos in general are being named as the culprit following FBG Duck murder related arrests. So in Chicago, just this past weekend or just very recently, 5 suspects were arrested for the 2020 murder of Chicago rapper FBG Duck. And of course I'm gonna go through all of these names: Charles C. Murder Liggins, Kenneth Kenny Robertson, Takarlos Los Offered, Christopher C. Thang Thomas, and Marcus Muwop Smart.
My favorite, Marcus Muwop Smart, 100%.
Get smart, baby. yeah, so feds in the Windy City are basically saying, quote, what's happening on social media and what's happening in the music videos that are on YouTube, particularly in the drill rap genre, it shows you what's happening in the city. It shows you exactly what's happening in the city, which are people flooding the streets to commit acts of violence and then bragging about acts of violence or talking about how they're going to retaliate through other acts of violence, and it's happening on a regular basis. Again, that's why it's significant that as law enforcement, we are able to investigate and hold people accountable for the acts they're committing. For instance, you can go on the internet right now, you can see people in music videos and guns all over the place. It sounds like
Can I give you a funny fact of this story?
Please do.
Random thing I just heard. So apparently one of the gang members used his own name to purchase a car used in the slaying of FBG Chuck. And then he returned the vehicle less than 2 hours later when the dealership accused him lying on a financial application. It's like, oops. Hey, I need a car for 2 hours. Goes by, kills him, drops it off. There you go.
I love the idea of just like, hey, we're going to need the car back. It's like, all right, no worries. You're good. It was just a test drive.
We did an extended test drive on this vehicle. Can't say it does get away fast.
Anyways, but overall, like this is one of those things where, okay, yeah, there's an element of a lot of rap music where it's just sort of like bragging about the crimes you just did. But there's also this sort of like lazy, hacky, goes back to a lot of really dark history of the FBI and the CIA just saying, oh, this entire blanket genre of music, this entire thing is representative of crime and all of these different elements, etc. So we have to watch out for this and particularly persecute this. It's often used as a justification for increased policing in a lot of different regions. And doesn't make a lot of sense, because then people are just going to be profiled as, hey, you with puffy pants walking in a neighborhood as a black person, are you a drill rapper? We're going to arrest you and search you now. Or, like, it's I'm kind of exactly. joking, but like it very no, quickly leads up to that.
Exactly. Because we have seen it many, many times before, especially the feds.
Yeah. It's just a very historical thing, not even exclusive to music, but just in history with Black Panthers, Latin yep. Kings, a whole bunch of other different stuff.
Yep.
Moving on. So Meek Mill is, ordinarily I wouldn't talk too much about this story, but I think he's caught in an interesting kind of situation that's a very audio face kind of moment.
Yes.
And so Meek Mill's Expensive Pain album was recently released. We gave it a lot of credit for being like a really well-produced, like thought-out album, really like record it. With a lot of like good bangers and songs that really like expose you to Meek Mill as a person in a really good way.
It starts the polar opposite of punk, I will tell you that much.
Oh, yeah. Starts hard in the paint. It's a real like trapper's trap album. No disrespect to punk. That being said, it debuted number 3 on the Billboard chart after Drake and Taylor Swift. And what can I say? Like, Taylor Swift is one of the top artists in the country and the world, and she's re-releasing her music every couple of months. So, like, well, hey.
Yeah, so, like, you're not, like, good luck.
Yeah, Drake and Meek Mill have history. Most of that seems to be squashed right now, but, like, Drake is Drake, and he just dropped a record. And because of all the Drake Kanye West stuff that was happening before that, there was a ton of free publicity that happened for that record that Meek Mill, choosing to behave himself this time, and honestly, I'm thankful for that, didn't get a lot of that BS publicity.
Free Meek Mill.
And so guess what? He's not number 1 or number 2. He's number 3 under Taylor Swift and Drake. That's totally fine. But also this whole what do you chart on the Billboards thing, it's not something we almost ever talk about on audio phase, really. And yeah, because it doesn't matter. Like, we don't know how, like, Billboard has a ranking system. They trust their ranking system. A lot of people trust their ranking system. But a lot of these ranking systems, you, like, peep under the hood a little bit, and you may go, well, does X metric really count as a view? And more importantly, like, why are we looking at stream count or stream plays as a gauge of how quality or good something is? That just seems exactly. to be, like, directly
you need to
the opposite.
Gauge it for, you need to listen to even an album of music and then get for it to through yourself of your own opinion and whatnot. And that's why we have this podcast, because yeah. there's going to be albums that don't chart that will be album of the year worthy candidates and stuff. So that's the whole thing with charting, is I always thought it's just a little bullshit anyways. It's just seeing how popular it is. That has no effect, at least for us, of if an album is good or not.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't have it. It shouldn't form anybody's opinion either on if an album is good or not, seeing how it's charting.
Yeah, it's very redundant. If anything, an album being popular or not works against you on audio face, because we're going to be more critical of, like, okay, why are so many people listening to this when it sucks? And, you know, through the years, we just kind of realized that that's a fact of particularly American popular music. But, I'll say two things on this. Like, one being that a lot of this is driven by DJ Academics purely because...
Of course.
He'll just post on Instagram like Monday morning going, or not even Monday morning, like Saturday afternoon going, oh, this record is projected to sell this much by Billboard. Thoughts? Question mark. And he does it for his own, like, you know, to trigger discourse, which gets engagement, which, you know, does well for his own brands and his own channel, right? So we can get more views. But ultimately, it's this pressure that's being put on numbers when part of the conversation, which helps DJ Academics get more like engagement and views, is that, you know, the numbers don't tell the full story, as we're saying here. That's the first thing. Second thing, Meek Mill was saying, me, I'd rather take me off Billboard. You got to think about it. What's the purpose of me being on Billboard? If Jay-Z talking about he don't believe in the Billboard, he been in the game for 30 years, why should I put myself in a position to be where they say allegedly something is being manipulated, and then I'm putting my brand on a list that's being manipulated? He didn't really specify whether Billboard's charts were manipulated or not, or like slanted in any kind of way. But I think you don't even have to make that argument. The charts aren't the end all be all.
Exactly. They're not. I mean, and in defense of Meek Mill, I like what he says, where he says, I want people to listen to it and make their own opinion of it. Like, I want them to feel the music. I'm like, there you go. And that's what you should do. You shouldn't. Artists should make music you know, for this themselves, for their audience, for art, whatever they want. But they should never, like, my thing, a big critique I always have of music is you should never make music just to sell shit. You shouldn't make music for it to become popular, to do the chain smokers bullshit of I want to be famous to get chicks stuff, because then you might end up with Music of the Spheres by Coldplay, and that is 12 songs, 41 minutes long, and this is a heaping pile of garbage bullshit where they put emojis in and I'm mad, god damn it, and you shouldn't listen to this. Don't give Chris Martin any more money. Stop it now. Dan, your thoughts before I get bleeped.
We listen to Music of the Spheres by Coldplay, so you don't have to.
Yep.
It's 41 minutes long, 42 minutes long. Half the songs are emoji titles. And believe me when I say, I'm not trying to sound like a zoomer, those songs are just vibes. Like, it's
just no ambient, music,
just vibes.
They're just ambient things because they try to make a concept record about not being on Earth and shit, because that's all Coldplay do the past 10 years is just make random concept records about space and the universe all the time. And
colors.
Every time, and colors. And it's not very good. And I think I found something I hate more than when you title tracks or make a record that's full of caps is with emojis. So if anyone else puts emojis as song titles, you are officially on my worst music of the year list. I don't care who you are. If Tom York, if you do it, I'm giving it to you, my guy. I don't care. I hate it with a passion.
We have a fast track rule now. It's interesting.
It's extreme fast track. At least that's the Sean rule.
It's really, this album is maybe five songs. Like, out of 12 songs, five of them are songs. One of them is just an overboard long ass piece, and then the rest are just like weird transitionary vibes, right? This is supposedly a quarantine album. If we're gonna be more cynical here, this is like a bunch of songs rushed to help ride the BTS wave. I mean, it's sort of what it just looks like, just from viewing out here, because they released that song.
And they said that we can't be together. Because we come from different sides. You are my universe, and I just want to put you first.
With BTS, My Universe, which we didn't review as a single because we already talked about Higher Power, which wasn't confidence-inspiring either.
Yeah.
And ultimately what we're getting at, like, while we can be serious for a moment before we just, like, trash into this whole thing, is that, as we talked about in our Coldplay bonus, episode 121 bonus, that you can listen to in the archives, there was a time when Coldplay was making, you know, they were at the very edge of alternative rock music. Like, they were just, like, pushing the boundaries there. This was in the early 2000s. And please listen to that episode because we go into it and it's only, like, 40 minutes even, so it's not even that long. But ultimately, you get to a point where, as we've sort of, like, surmised, Coldplay got a touch of fame. They loved those arena shows. They loved, like, NFL halftime shows and things like that. And a lot of their music seems to be driven by that, seeking more eyeballs. And exactly. The sound has gone further and further and further by the wayside. They will disagree with you very vehemently on this fact, but the music speaks for itself.
Exactly. As I like to say, how do you go from tracks like Yes and Strawberry Swing to a track called Beautiful, which I'm going to get to in a second? Higher Power after Saturn Emoji. I already hate saying this already. It's just, you know, I'm a pop track, and it just, because they had, you know, there are these, I think a thing with Coldplay too, going before we, like, really super dive into the record, they released Everyday Life in 2019, which we both actually liked. We enjoyed the record, thought it was a step in the right direction after three records in a row of them just more and more going to the pop sphere and losing touch with who they are as musical artists and just completely selling out just for arena shows and eyeballs because Chris Martin wants to date more movie stars and shit. But Everyday Life was their worst selling record to date. it did not chart well. It did not sell well and stuff because it was a very understated record. It was more of their indie style, and it kind of combined the styles of their older songs with the newer tracks, which I enjoyed. So I think with this, they rushed it because I think they got, you know, a little self-conscious of, oh, did we lose that? You know, we didn't, because, you know, they didn't get to tour that album much because of naturally of 2020. And I feel like they really wanted to just rush music to get more eyeballs on them and say, hey, look, we can still do arenas. We can still do this. We can still be one of the best artists out there and so on and so forth. And you can hear that because Higher Power, it sounds like just, you know, a really rushed pop song. They went with, I can't think of his name off the top of my head. It's Max something, a producer who has produced like a generations of pop, from Britney Spears to NSYNC to Backstreet Boys to some of Taylor Swift and The Weeknd stuff. And they worked with this producer for the first time on Higher Power and on My Universe with BTS. I think to really pump it out and try to get as much engagement as you can for views, for clicks, to
You're talking about Max
get it
Martin.
Out. Max Martin, there we go. Thank you. Yeah, I know he's a lead Scandinavian producer. He's been doing production for like 27 years or something like that. Been all over tracks. You've definitely heard a lot of his production. After Higher Power, you get Humankind. And it's, again, more the same. Just you're over generalized pop. The production sounds super cheap. It's not. It's nothing to be like really pumped for. It's just lackluster and cheap.
It would have been sort of hacky and overdone in 2011, but 10 years later,
it's horrible. Exactly, because, you know, they made the pivot to Milo Xylo in 2011, and that was already a pivot as is. You could say, okay, they're trying something different in 2011, whatever, but then, you know, the past couple records since then, it's just been more of the same, trying to, you know, make pop heavy records, make pop sounding tracks and whatnot, just to sell out arenas. Then you have whatever emoji that is, and then you have Let Somebody Go with Selena Gomez, and it's a little piano ballad. And again, it just, even with Selena Gomez on the track, she can't make the track good. It just sounds, again, cheap and overproduced and not very well thought out. Yeah. And that's basically like a theme of this whole record.
I had a little bit of hope around People of the Pride.
There's a man who walks around like he owns the fucking lot. There's a man who takes his time from his homemade cuckoo clock. And he makes us march around it. Tick tock, tick tock, tick tock.
It felt like that was a song where, okay, and Coldplay is teased me a lot with this, where like I would point to, at least personally for me, and A Head Full of Dreams, Adventure of a Lifetime was one of their poppier songs, but it felt like,
and that
creating,
was actually a decent pop track.
Yeah, it felt like within the song they're creating like a musical soundscape and a journey with different parts and bits to it, but in a standard rock track 4 minutes long, it felt like more vast, like a classical piece. More on that later. But like People of the Pride, it feels like they're trying to do some like, you know, like rock revival sort of thing, like a lot of artists are trying to do from the Coldplay kind of era. And, you know, it's like, they maybe still got it. But then they keep doubling down and arguing as a band that, no, it's songs like Let Somebody Go and Humankind and My Universe and Bei Teufel that are where we're pushing forward and doing things well. But
can I talk about that track? Can I talk about Beautiful? This is my least favorite thing I've ever listened to on audio space.
I hope that you get everything you want in this beautiful life. Watermelon moon, so happy you're alive. And I feel like a river finally arrived at sea. Cause when you love me, love me, love me.
This might take over the Quality Control boat skirt for the worst thing I've ever listened to for this podcast. Dan, don't say I don't work hard for this, because I force myself like this to not rip my headphones off and to listen to this. Because I wanted to get angry because of how bad it is. It sounds like somebody took a Fisher-Price toy, stuck a melodica in it, sang through it, made it up in about 2 minutes for a high school project that they forgot about, turned it in and said, there you go, that's my project. And the teacher's like, get the fuck out of my classroom, you're out. And it's just, it's horrible. It's so bad.
Yeah, it sounds like Coldplay's trying to make Zoomer bedroom pop.
It's and... like you're trying to make fucking... What's the stupid app Zeds use all the time that I don't... it's TikTok. There you go. I can think of it. The Jesus scrolly Christ boy.
Showing your age, brother.
Yeah, I don't do that shit. You know that. It sounds honestly like a TikTok track. Yep.
Yeah, it sort of sounds like one of those... it sounds like one of those TikTok ads where it has some like weirdly dreamy music in the background. It's like has a robot voice that's like, look at this new thing that you should buy, spend your money on now. Like it's like one of those like ad background songs.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought of it as. It was one of those robot sound voices, which I guess that's what TikTok is half the time. Then you get Earth Emoji, which the Earth is on fire now, apparently. And then you get My Universe of BTS, which is just a pop clusterfuck.
That's what the, like, make no mistake, that's what the album was made for. This album is meant to be
seriously
a briefcase around My Universe with Coldplay and BTS. And to be fair, BTS said, oh, it'd be cool to work with Coldplay or something, and Coldplay was like, huh? Money?
Us? Really? We can still do it? And then you have Infinity Sign, and then Coloratura.
A 10-minute long orchestral song where, again, Coldplay insist. It's almost like Coldplay are having whatever Weezer's smoking, where like they insist, no, we're a good band and we're going to do what we like and people like it, so we're going to continue doing it. It's just an absolute refusal to listen to outside criticism.
Yeah, it sucks because there's Coratura is, you know, 10 minutes long, a little over 10 minutes long. There's like a brief 45-second period towards like 6.5 minutes where it sounds like old Coldplay, like Viva La Vida, X and Y style Coldplay, where I have like a hint of like, oh my God. And then it goes back to horribleness right after, like shortly thereafter into the middle of the track. And I go, well, we tried. And it's horrible. It's really bad.
Yes. I can't say I expected better.
Because we review a lot of pop on here. We even review pop rock and stuff, and we've done a bunch of other stuff, and this is bad because this year we have a lot of good pop, surprisingly. And this is one of the worst ones we've had so far.
Yeah, this is like an Ariana Grande album I would have reviewed in 2019. This is the same feeling I have towards it. It's just like just really shitty.
Except with less Sean controversies and more Sean anger.
Yeah. Wonder what the difference is there. Arbitrary scale this week is self-report. Arbitrary scale this week. Joe Manchin, Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia's top donors. I'm going to give this the Northrop Grumman.
God damn it. I was going to do the same. Okay. Just to be different, I'm going to give this the National Association of Realtors.
Oh, God. Actually, can I give this One America AT&T Inc.?
That's a good one, too.
Oh, my God. Moving on. So, it seems like this is around the time of the year where Sean and I get to be mad about the Grammys for something.
Yeah, exactly. It's time, boys.
Yeah.
We listen to even an album. But apparently they don't like this album.
Yeah, they won't listen to even this album. So Bo Burnham's comedy special Inside, comedy, loose air quotes, special thing, performance that was Inside. It received a lot of, you know, praise, a lot of critical acclaim, essentially, because it was sort of like this quarantine opus comedy special thing that was filmed sort of like on lockdown. And it had to do a lot about meta commentary about being a content creator, selling your hobbies and things on the internet, and like talking about those things. It was deep in some ways, how people related to social justice while also having to be far removed from it because of COVID restrictions. There's a lot of vibes in this, and there's a lot of songs in here. And hey, these songs are composed and rehearsed and performed live in this record. And so the folks behind Bo Burnham, they tried to essentially submit it to the Recording Academy for a bunch of different awards.
Yeah.
I want to try to figure out, like, that a number of different things they wanted to put it for. And it's won a lot of awards too. But basically, the Grammys are still considering Burnham for Best Compilation Soundtrack for Visual Media, where it would compete with movies and video game soundtracks. And it isn't allowed to compete for kind of any other genre at all, essentially, or any other
not
kind
even
of
comedy
picking.
Genre.
Yeah.
Which is, that's the genre it's in. But, you know, the joke that is the Grammys keeps producing more and more jokes.
Yeah. Best comedy album would have made a lot of sense. But again, the issue with the Grammys is that they create this very inconsistent sort of way, inconsistent and non-transparent way of deciding these things. And then they want you to believe in the pomp and circumstances of, oh, care about the Grammys. This is an important award show. We're recognizing artists. But in these moments, it really just sort of seems like it's kind of just, oh, it's going to be our own secret club and we're going to be gatekeeping what music truly sounds like. Not a fan of it.
And yeah, and more people are getting disenfranchised by it, which is good.
Yeah, more and more people are realizing that they don't need traditional forms of affirmation, such as like Billboard charts, like we were talking about with Meek Mill, or award shows, to believe that your music is good. You need your fans, you need audience, you need a couple of music critics who are closer to that fans and audience than they are traditional forms of media. Audio Face Pod, follow us at Audio Face Pod on Twitter and Instagram. And this is the way the music industry is moving to, and I like that.
100% agreed. Soulja Boy, tell him.
Soulja Boy's popping off online again. It's like that one Nas song. It's, hey, I'm Peter Popoff, and I'm here to pop off.
Oh, I wonder what happened to his video game console. Oh, wait.
So, Soulja Boy said a number of different comments for NBA YoungBoy and his fans. Let me read some of them. Quote, YB fans gay AF. That's how we started this tirade. Oh boy, welcome back to 2013.
Oh man, never change. Soulja Boy tweeted, Xbox 360 lobbies, boys.
Soulja Boy. Soulja Boy, aka Riley Freeman, tweeted, I don't like NBA YoungBoy no more. Shrug emoji, blame it on his fans. Nah, fuck his fans. He made me hate that nigga. YB need to make better music. All that crying and whining on the track. Nobody want to hear that shit. YB fell off.
When is the last time Soulja Boy ever released music that wasn't immediately thrown out? Is my question.
Soulja Boy is like a 1-2-hit wonder. Like,
he didn't even make even an album, dude.
He didn't even make even a game console, dude.
Seriously, so until you do something with your life, drop the shenanigans.
Considering, drop the shenanigans, I love that. Considering, YoungBoy NBA, like, had that meme where it's like, oh, NBA YoungBoy fans just, like, dumb and angry all the time. You'd wonder how NBA YoungBoy fans respond to this. And this is the meme saying this, not me. But people are saying, people are just like surprised that Soulja Boy would even use gay in a derogatory fashion like this. Like, again, like, why is it 2013 or something?
Yeah, exactly.
People were basically saying, why be better? Commenting in response. shortly after posting the tweet, Soulja Boy said, I'm a fan of YB. Not all YB fans is gay, just the ones that say fell off ratio, which doesn't totally make sense to me. But basically, people were... But someone really said, this MF soldier pulling out the gay insult like it's 2013. You call yourself the first at everything, but young boy does everything in life better than you, little bro. According to another Twitter user. So just a lot of people, just soldier boy is... This is the thing that happened in that Boondocks episode where Thugnificent was going after Sergeant Gutter. Except exactly. Sergeant Gutter was meant to be soldier boy. Now soldier boy has become the old head who is angrily complaining that the new kid's better than him.
Exactly.
Oh, how the trap world turns.
Sergeant Gutters could eat a dick.
I mean, watch this end with NBA Youngboy calling Soulja Boy's mom.
Oh, please. Yes.
Lastly, this
just
week...
Just mad because your ass is old. Oh, my God.
Lastly, this week, we have Optimist by Phineas. It is 13 songs, 43 minutes long. Phineas is the man behind the woman known as Billie Eilish. Billie
All
Eilish,
the better.
Yes. Billie Eilish, of course, like very accomplished musician, pop musician. Everyone knows about her. Just come off of her second album that has done very well for herself and shown herself as a musician. Phineas has kind of been in behind the scenes of that, doing a lot of the production work. Definitely not all of it, because Phineas has his own style and tone, as we get to see here, kind of in its purest. But I think this is a really interesting opportunity to kind of see Phineas. He's a very musically talented kind of person, traditionally kind of informed in music, as it were, taught in those kind of traditional fashions. And here he is making kind of a pop record, a very poppy sounding record, using everything within his musical repertoire. Sean, what did you think?
It took me two listens to get into this album. The second track goes hard in the fucking paint, but we'll get into that in a second. It's very acoustic heavy. You can tell his production style, what he likes to do. Also, this is his first LP, I believe, right? Because he's only done EPs and singles before, yeah. Correct? All right.
That's why. So,
yeah. And, I mean...
Well, there's Blood Harmony Deluxe was like this sort of, yeah, EP drop. I'd call it a drop kind of thing. But yeah. Let's call it the first proper album.
Exactly. First proper album. So, guy's just a big... just artist in general, because he's an actor. He's been on a bunch of different shows and shit, and he's been doing music for a long time as well. He definitely has a style that you can hear now, like within the production, and understand like now more of Billie's music as well. The first track, A Concert 6 Months From Now, it's like a decent track to kind of get you into the album of, okay, it's going to be more of that stripped back acoustic singer-songwriter style of pop record. And that's true to a point. You have a lot of that in here. You have some other understated pop stuff here. There you have more piano things and experimental tracks and stuff later on, but we'll get to that. And then you have the second track, The Kids Are All Dying, which I really like. It's one of my favorite pop tracks of the year because of just the lyrics of it are great.
I think the lyrics of it are all right. We're kind of maybe disagreeing here.
About love when the kids are all dying. How can you sing about drugs? Politicians are lying. How can you sing about sex when the school is on lockdown, lockdown? Now, baby, maybe we're next. Maybe we're next. I know my pool is heated. Business class is where I'm seated. And I'm whiter than the ivory on these keys. I think too much about myself.
I think it's sort of like the background music of it is, or like the lyrics in it are basically, why are we all rapping and celebrating when there are all these like really big like global issues going on? And we've always do this on Audio Phase all the time, where what's the line between, oh, this is just like a preachy kind of political song, or oh, this is like woke talking about shit that people normally usually don't. And I have to lean on the side of preachy on this one, because I think the take that oh, there's all these different things going on in the world and nobody's talking about them, people are just sort of like dancing and partying instead, is sort of outdated, I would say. Like, it's sort of like a early Trump administration kind of thing. I'd say it's more like of an analysis. I'd say it's more of people have these celebrations and things sort of like as a break, as a respite, as sort of like a response, a counterculture sort of aspect, because the main culture is doing so much, because we are like inundated with so much of the bad that's going on. And that's not to say, oh, let's just brush over that and only think about the good. But I think it's, there's a lot of musicians, Billie Eilish included, your sister included, who are talking about these things in deep ways and talking about the dichotomy of, yeah, I care about all these like issues right now, but I also have to be a person. I have all these like feelings and things, and I want to have all these emotions that aren't just sulking in the darkness and depths of politics. But that's sort of just the thing of it, and like that's sort of just like the last note on it. And the rest of this album is the context of a regular sort of pop album with regular sort of love songs and nothing that seems to go much deeper than that. So like, interesting note there, not like the most sleep thing ever, but also not like Loved If We Made It levels of like
it's
bar
not
stopping
Love If
woke,
We Made, you know? No. Loved If We Made It is, it's a track that will forever go down in the audio face history, both of us sitting down and listening to it like, Jesus Christ, this is an incredible, like, wow track. No, I just like it. I like The Kids Are All Dying because there's one lyric, it's like, do you have a dollar for me to fund a war? And then towards the end of the track, he goes in and talks about his own whiteness. He says, my skin is as white as these ivory keys here. So it's like, I understand my own thing, like my own, like I have my own bubbles and stuff, and I'm trying to get out of those bubbles and get into that. So I thought it was decently done on it, and I like the track.
That's fair.
Especially towards the end, because if he didn't have that little interlude to the part, the falsetto part, talking about like himself and saying, hey, I'm a person of privilege, I can sit up here in my little ivory tower and talk about these things when everybody else has to fucking deal with them. He has that, you know, realization of himself to do that. Then that's when I have like, okay, yeah, that's when I really like the track after that part. But yeah, after that, like, you have decent stuff in here, but there is some stuff that is a little bit lackluster. Some things that could be a little bit too slow. And you have obviously like the normal like stuff of love and other things of like talk about happiness. Somebody, you know, who has been very successful, and what does that mean? What does success mean to you as a person? Which, like, example, the third track right after The Kids Are All Dying, Happy Now. You have that like, what does it mean to be happy now? What does it do that? Which is fine. You have Only a Lifetime right after, which I think is where you can get, where he can get issues, is these slow tracks. He has a good voice, but his voice alone can't carry the slow tracks.
It's only a lifetime, it's not long enough. You're not gonna like it without any love, so don't waste it. I'm unimpressed.
Because, you know, if you make a slow track, like, example, Adele, like we reviewed her single today, her voice is powerful enough, or you have Sam Smith and a couple other artists whose their vocal range and their caliber and their crispness and stuff of their range is enough to carry a track on its own. And even if it's a really slow track and it builds and builds, they have the ability to do that. When you don't have an ability to do that, and you don't have like a unique set of, you don't have a unique voice like an Alex Turner, even a Tom York, somebody who really knows what their voice is and can manipulate it to go into the track and then have it produce, have that production to go along with it, then that's when you could get these issues of tracks sounding really lackluster and a little bit like what you're wanting. Because now you can understand, like, him as a producer, fantastic. Because these tracks are super crisp and clean. Like, there isn't one sound that is misplaced necessarily. There isn't one thing that is overly done or overly, like, generalized. But within his own vocal range, just as him, that's what's lacking in the record.
Yeah, I can agree with a lot of that. I think he's got some really good lyrical ideas here.
For sure.
There's a lot of good emotion within here. I think when you actually get past the Peaches etude, which a bit on that in a moment, you get to the latter half of the album with like Hurt Locker, Medieval. Hurt Locker especially, I think, you kind of get a lot of, you know, the best of Phineas as producing for himself in his own sort of lane, but also kind of getting into emotions and, you know, the deep introspection that he's pulling from and like the experience that you got to imagine he's pulling from here.
Of a grocery store, pan down to the crooked wheel on the dirty white floor. Maybe all I'll ever be is a cameo here. A face the crowd might recognize, it comes on twice a year. And then I disappear. Did I cut the wrong wire?
But I think a lot of this is very much like a record for musicians and other artists, right? Like, you have to be really clued in to musical construction and production to appreciate a lot of like the higher level heady things here. And I think absent that understanding, you sort of get a bland record because like, just they take like Peaches etude, for example, like the word etude, it comes from Peaches. Music. Yeah. Yes. It comes from music, right? Like these are things that it's a nice little like piano piece in the middle, but a musician, someone who's into music will appreciate, oh, I like how that's there. I like how that's placed, it's put. But as an album, as it flows, I'm not sure if it doesn't necessarily get in the way. I think it like makes the album, separates the two parts there. But I think it gets to an issue with the overall tone of this album that's very heady in the music theory and not necessarily just focused on, okay, making these beats sound interesting or making this sound more, I guess I'm losing a little bit of my words here, but there's definitely something missing from it. I think you're getting at, Sean, when it's talking about the vocals don't do enough to carry it.
Yeah, if you had somebody else's vocals on here within like the same lyrics, everything else, I think you could have carried some of the tracks more, some of the slower tracks a little bit more. Slash, if he had done, I wouldn't say like mess with his vocals necessarily, but if you had changed the production a little bit to have a little bit experimentation and stuff to supplement the voice well, to complement his voice well, then he could have had an outstanding album, because there are bits and pieces of here that are great. Like Hurt Locker, I thought is actually a pretty good track right after the Peaches etude. Like towards the middle of that track, you have some pretty good, like good solid pop sounds and stuff in here, which I enjoy. I like the really deep drum bass in here that you get throughout the whole track. And you have some other tracks in here that are pretty good as well, but that's what's lacking a little bit, is just that. And then figuring out how to balance everything as well is another thing too, because when he can do that well, there makes tracks that are good. But if it doesn't, then again, that's when you get that little missingness of, you want something. But I think as a full LP, as somebody who is more known as a producer and stuff, and someone who does have obviously his own stuff, I thought it's a pretty decent effort for a full LP. We might be a little bit more critical because we know how good he is as a producer by himself, like as himself naturally. But for first full LP, I think it's a decent effort.
Yeah, I definitely say it's decent. It's beautiful even at times. And there's a lot of artistry to it. I just think that the approach for like a high art kind of like arts master's degree approach to the pop record, right? I'm not sure if like I feel just like a lot of pretension around this record that's unnecessary. Like I think Phineas can, for his future projects, kind of get rid of that. He doesn't need to prove himself as being like an artist or musician in any of those kind of ways. Just like have a little bit more. This shouldn't feel like a stuffy university project, is what I'm saying, right? This should feel a little bit more freeing, especially like where he is. I don't think Phineas has to prove anything to anyone, myself included, but I feel like that need for it to be almost academic in a way is holding it back. It's not something I feel from a lot of records usually, but I just emanate that. It emanates that for me from this album. Arbitrary scale. Because what we said in the review is what we said in the review. This week, in Joe Manchin's Donors, what are you going to give this?
Goldman Sachs, baby.
That's nice and stuffy.
Solid Goldman. Solid Goldman. Yep. He's a real Goldman Sachs asshole.
Call him the Goldman Girls. No. I'll make this the American Bankers Association. You know, just
it's nice and snooty as well, baby.
Yes.
Solid gold asshole.
Almost as snooty as the Walt Disney Company, who also donates to... We should really be on this. Like, Toyota, Verizon, PwC, like, wow, I'm... Let me stop before this becomes a PowerPoint episode. Joe Manchin's terrible, and he's the reason nothing's getting done.
Him and Sinema.
Him, fucking Kyrsten Sinema, and a lot of moderate Democrats who are allowing Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin to be the fall man and women.
Chuck Schumer's them. Tiny balls.
Hashtag no politics. Crickets.
Remember after... when we say cancel culture doesn't exist? Well, here's a fucking proof told you so. Extreme told you so.
Even after R. Kelly's guilty verdict,
guilty
in federal verdict. Court, his streaming went up 500%. He also saw a 55% rise in radio play across the country. So,
radio play, fuck's sake, dude.
Yeah, it's like we talked about when Morgan Wallen's sales go earlier this episode, when Morgan Wallen's sales were starting to skyrocket after the N-word controversy. It's like, no, we want to listen to him more after this. It's, I don't know. Like, I guess people do listen to news stories in regards of how bad the person is. That reminds me. I want to listen to some more of this person. This is the pattern I'm noticing. Coachella 2022, which I'll be doing some immediate coverage on, it looks like, is looking like they're going to drop their vaccine mandate entirely. You no longer have to prove that you have taken the vaccine that by that time will have been available for longer than a year and appears to have been proven to be largely safe. You'll just need to show a proof of a negative test taken within 72 hours of the event, which I think is kind of unfair because, like, there's some people who can test positive but, like, be fully vaccinated. And if they're around a bunch of people who are fully vaccinated, like, it can be fine. But in that case, Coachella is just taken away from them.
That's weird. It should be, like, I don't like that. That's, Because, you know, normal stuff right now is you either show your proof of a negative test within 72 hours or you show your vaccination record.
Let me clarify. I'm reading it. So they'll also accept proof of full vaccination. It's not going to be an or thing. It's either one. So you can show your proof of vaccination and not do the 72-hour COVID test and, like, that'll be fine.
Gotcha.
But if you don't want to show proof of vaccination because... I'm not going to get kicked off of YouTube for this. Then you can just show a negative PCR test and that'll be fine. It's a compromise. I think it's kind of April 2022 is going to be very, very late to be doing that sort of compromise. So whatever. But there's that. And we always like to end Audio Face on a little bit of a fun note. And what could be more fun than a little bit of artist on artist love? There's a video, there's a photo of... one of the members of
Julian Casablancas,
yes,
Julius Casablancas of the Strokes, headman of the Strokes,
yes,
posted a picture on his Instagram doing the cover of Arctic Monkeys' first record of whatever people say I am, that's not what I'm not. The infamous picture where I think Alex Turner took it of his mate totally, like, off the piss in a bar smoking a cig and then put Arctic Monkeys in the infamous cover photo. But Julian Casablancas did that, posted it of him smoking a cig in the same type of thing and put the Strokes on it. And he said, "Lol, I always wanted to be in the Arctic Monkeys." If you know the Arctic Monkeys, and my now confirmed my favorite song of Arctic Monkeys, Star Treatment, which I have listened to that song a solid 80,562 times. The beginning is Alex saying, "I just wanted to be one of the Strokes." So maybe you gave Alex Turner a stroke of showing him that picture of, like, oh my God, this actually happened. like my childhood dream, like the guy I grew up idolizing, really, is now putting on that, saying, "I just want to be one of the Arctic Monkeys." It's very cool, very cool and
Yeah,
funny.
very heartwarming and a nice way to look
End
at
the
that.
podcast.
Ending
And
Audio Face
I
in a
know
fully light note.
fully fine. No, and I know the Arctic Monkeys will be releasing music at some point, so I need to do a bonus episode for them.
Oh, ooh, ooh, there's an idea.
We
look
goes
at that. Look at that.
Oh shit, Joe Rogan. She was a 13.
This has been Audio Face. You can find us at Audio Face Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Joe Rogan's so rough. Sean can be found on Twitter and Instagram at SW Suarez. I can be found on Twitter at Dan from the Web and on Instagram at Dan from the Internet. We'll be back next week with more Audio Face, as we tend to do, as we always do. Thank you very much, Organics fans, everyone listening out there, for listening to us, keeping the podcast going. Not just like that random Arctic Monkeys idea that we just had. We've got a lot of exciting things coming up for you in the very near future that we'll be announcing soon.
Yes.
So please make sure you're subscribed to the podcast wherever you are listening or watching, if that's on YouTube, so you don't miss any of that. Thank you all for watching. Thank you, Peter, and cheers.
Toodaloo.